You're listening to Talking Boat Stuff, the Waterways Podcast, where we celebrate everything in, on, and around the water. This episode was recorded live at the 2024 Toronto International Boat Show and is powered by America's Boating Channel. Now, here's your favorite captain of conversation, Stephen Bull.
With that, we can announce that it is the first ever podcast and first ever podcast guest, Mr. Chad Buckner, manager of operations for Parks Canada Ontario Waterways. Is that right?
Thanks, man. Yeah.
How do you fit that on a business card?
Oh, I don't. I don't really give them out much.
So I know you just had a seminar.
Yeah.
Let's start with so we're recording live at the Toronto Boat Show, so if there's any background noise, that's what it is, and if the Boat Show God announces stuff, that's why. Yeah. So tell me about the seminar. Your seminars, I think, are the most popular.
Well, I was a little nervous today, I'm not going to lie to you, because right as I was walking up to the booth, all I hear is, and also at 12 o'clock, we have Twiggy, the water skiing squirrel, and that is a tough act, right? I was legit before I started, I was like, if anyone is in the wrong seminar right now, I will not judge you if you want to get up to go see the water skiing squirrel right now, because that's some serious competition. But no, we did pretty well. It was a pretty good turnout today. And again, that's, you know, as we had an unexpected guest show up in the middle of it, I think that's what makes it so special. That's what I really like about this show is it's an opportunity to take something else in. You can come and look at the boats. You can see, again, we have, you know, the fishing tanks beside us. There's something for the kids. There's the in-water stuff, which is great, and watching, you know, like the wakeboarders and even going out and paddling on the hockey rink that's turned into a lake. But it's also an opportunity to get up front and actually get to meet some other people and actually get to chat. And for me, I always like taking in some of our people in the industry and, you know, small quarters docking and, you know, listening about marinas and different stuff to do on the water. So I'm honestly very fortunate, very lucky to be in there to talk about, you know, the Ontario waterways, whether it be the Trent Severn and the Rideau Canal, and what makes them so special. So it's a great opportunity and something I look forward to every year.
Yeah, and let's back up a bit for how we met. Not the full details, because we met through, you know, when I was with Powerboat Television. We were doing a shoot, and the communications person, who's a wonderful human, Karen said, "Well, the manager of operations," and sent the full long title. And I thought, and this is terrible, and my apologies to my government friends. I was like, "Oh man, it's going to be some like bureaucrat or someone like." No, we want, and we don't need it. It's okay. Anyway, and then we had a little bit too much fun probably on that shoot together.
So that started.
And what blew me away, not just how much fun it was to be with you and how you're a great guy and a wonderful dad, which is what we bonded over, but you're an encyclopedia of the Trent. Like, it got to the point where I was trying to stump you. We'd get into a lock, and you're like, I'd ask a random question about like a ladder or something. You're like, oh, actually that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, there's 386 kilometers of the Trent,
yeah.
So too much to go over. But a couple of the highlights everyone wants to look at, like Big Chute Marine Railway is...
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you've built a viewing platform along it because it's that unique. People want to see it. So for the video podcast, I'll put up some images right now. And if you haven't seen it, you're listening just audio, it's a gigantic flatbed railway car, kind of, that goes up and over to act as a lift to take you from high water to low water.
Yeah.
So give me the backstory of why that's there. It wasn't designed as a tourism draw. That was just a happy accident on
right.
the side.
Yeah. Well, so originally when the Big Chute, so that was the last area of the Trent Severn that was completed, right? So it took 87 years for the Trent in its completion, right? So the first lock was built in Bob Cajun in 1833. The last lock was in Coochiching in 1920. But at that point up there and getting that last link from Lake Simcoe to Georgian Bay was the very last that was done. Again, granite rock, you know, part of that Canadian shield up there. But it was right around the war. So building locks were expensive at that point. And with everyone over in the military and doing that, and again, defending the country in the war, the marine railway at that point was the cheapest way to do it. So just clearing out the top of the rock, quite literally at that point, the technology wasn't the same as what they constructed in 78. It was a rail cart that went up, and then it stayed on the incline in the exact same slope that was just like a mining corridor, and it's like a shaft that you'd mine to build a mining elevator, and up and over and down into the other side. So a lot of our waterway, it really flipped over to tourism focus, especially in around the 60s, right? Where, you know, in the 60s and the boom of the 80s, we were doing almost 250,000 boats going through the system. So
wow.
Traffic at that point, you get backed up 3 to 4 days. So they started to modernize a lot of the locks. There used to be a marine lift also at Swift Rapids, but then we blasted it out, built the big 47-foot lift in Swift, and there was intentions on doing the same thing at Big Chute. So much so the lock was already started. Maybe we can shoot another show and actually go over and look at that wall at some point and some of the lost part of the canal that nobody knows about. But then when they were about to start to do that work and really looking at the Big Chute, there was a sea lamprey. And the sea lamprey was affixed to one of the boats. And then as that came out, the sea lamprey naturally fell and went back into the water. So that was, at that point, the ending of the dream of building a conventional lock at Big Chute. And ever since then, we've been dealing with the Big Chute that it is now, which is one of few in the world and North America's only. And it's a boat roller coaster, exactly as you described.
Yeah. And is that the original one that's parked beside it, or one of the original?
One of the originals parked right beside it.
Yeah. So if you make the trip to Big Chute, just you put it in your GPS, Big Chute, C-H-U-T-E, it'll take you right there. There's parking lots nearby. You can walk and check it out. You'll see the original one. He's not kidding. It's just railway tracks that just go down.
Yeah.
That'd be crazy. So how does it operate? There's not a motor on it driving the wheels like a locomotive, right?
Yeah, inside the lock cabin, again, there's massive, really, mining shaft, very, very similar technology. So the engine room, and it communicates to the cart directly from the actual operating cabin. And then it's in sync, so there's two separate levels if you look at it, because what we learned about with the original cart was the incline. It's a steep incline going down. So if the cart is going down on an incline and the brakes were to be hit, the cart will stop, but the boats, well, it's wood. It'll continue to slide. So when they reconstructed the new cart, it was brought down on a double tiered. So as the Big Chute comes down now in our version, it comes down and it stays level all the way to the bottom. So if we ever got into a braking scenario, the actual cart would stop, but it's not on an actual incline, even though it's going down the cliff.
Right. And a question that I've been asked a few times, because people have seen it and they're like, was that just for wave runners and canoes or little boats? What's the max size vessel that can handle?
So we have right now, the max is 100 tons. So 100 tons.
Oh.
Now we have on occasion lifted a boat heavier than that, but it's 100 tons to go up and down. And as long as you don't have any real unique hull configuration at that point, and 24 feet is the narrowest.
And so people that are doing the loop, or even just cottagers that want to go and experience it, that you don't have to do the whole system. If you have a boat near there, you can go and trailer launch and just go down Big Chute, come up Big Chute, right?
Yep. Now, it's probably our most popular boat that we have in doing that is the local day runners, where, you know, majority of our boat traffic going through there is locals up and over and heading back down again.
I like it. But obviously there's, you know, either you can get a pass for the season, or is there day passes? If I want to go and throw my wave runner in and just go over Big Chute, can I just get like a single day thing, or do I have to buy the whole season?
Yeah, no, we have multiple passes. So we have what we call single lock and return, which is just through one lock and then back on the same day or later on in the season, but it's only one lock. You have a day pass that locks you through as many locks as you can do in a single day. And then there's a six-day permit, which is any 6 days of the year. And I often tell people this because it's probably one of those things that's not as well known in the boating world, is if you use a six-day permit, it's any 6 days of the year. They don't have to be consecutive.
Oh, so I'm guilty of that,
you
too.
Would
I was
be.
Like, oh, well, yeah, if I did a long weekend or something, that would work. That's just any six, like
randomized.
Basically a punch card
style. It's a punch card. And then
okay.
If you use all of those 6 days, you're not out. You can take the money that you paid for that 6 days, see one of our staff members, and then all you have to do is pay the difference to a season's permit. So then you can upgrade that 6 day to a season's permit, so you're not out. So especially for those boaters who are not sure how many days they'll use in the system, I recommend the 6 day. And then if you use all of it, like many of us, it will burn a hole in your pocket when you're actually out on the system, because you're going to take in everything that it is. You don't worry about it. You can just pay the difference after and upgrade it to a season's permit, which obviously our next permit is the season's permit, which is unlimited locking, not only on the Trent, the Rideau Canal, and the system in Quebec as well, which I know you you did last year heading to New York.
Yeah, I did. I've done. How many more are there? So I've done the Chambly Canal, Saint Ours, Rideau, Trent Severn,
Saint Anne de Bellevue. Well, the Quebec, we call the Quebec canals. So that system itself is the system in Quebec. So you've done. I'm thinking about it now. I think you've done pretty much all. There's a couple parts of the Trent we haven't got you through. Ooh, no, you've done it all.
I think. All right, sound effects. Look at that.
You've done them all. You've done the full Rideau. You've done the full Rideau. You've done the full Trent, not on camera, but you've done it privately.
Yeah.
And then last year when you headed down to do your filming in New York City, you got through the entire Quebec. So you're one of the few, Steve.
Hey. So how does this work? Do they rename a lock in my honor? Do we do something like that?
Yeah, maybe.
I love that you even just humored me for a second
I
love
it. I'm thinking, how do I get out of this?
All right. So before we get to the Peterborough lift lock, which is super fascinating, I want to give Kirkfield some love because it gets overlooked. Because one, it's not in the biggest city on the Trent. And two, it's not as big as the lift lock in Peterborough made out of concrete. But let's talk about that one. So Kirkfield lift lock, it's steel, right?
It's steel.
So when was that one built, and what are we talking about, height and everything?
1907. That's actually great. I'm actually happy we're talking about this because here's our encyclopedia. So here's some new stuff that a lot of the world wouldn't know. So the superintending engineer who built the Peterborough lift lock, his name's R.B. Rogers. So he was local to Peterborough. Grew up in Peterborough. He constructed the Peterborough lift lock. Completed that lock in 1904, and he used other canals and other lift locks in the world to design the lift lock. So what makes the lift lock unique is Peterborough is it's the world's highest, and it's also made of concrete. So, and it's solid concrete. So back in the 1896 to 1900, reinforced concrete was just the beginning. It was just starting. So R.B. Rogers, as he built it, he built that completely solid concrete, Peterborough. But after that, he really started to learn a lot about steel. He was the same engineer who actually constructed the Kirkfield lift lock. So that's where his, and the way that he would have been thinking back then was, okay, I just built this solid concrete. I've learned now a lot about steel. We're going to build this lift lock a little bit cheaper than what we did in Peterborough and less political push at that time. And then he really fascinated with steel, and he built the Kirkfield lift lock completely out of steel and all the gantry system. Ah. It was easier, quicker, more efficient. And that was where the change was. So it was the same super engineering, the engineer who overseen Peterborough, built Kirkfield. But here's the interesting fact. So Kirkfield was completed 1907.
Okay.
He never got to actually unveil it in the grand ceremony because he was terminated from his role.
No.
Right before the grand finale of the complete release of the Kirkfield lift lock due to political pressures.
That is some cold-blooded stuff.
Cold-blooded. So R.B. Rogers was actually the superintendent engineer for both, constructed the world's highest hydraulic lift lock, and Kirkfield is the second highest hydraulic lift lock in the world at 47 feet tall.
So he's got the top two spots on the podium, and the political powers that be were like, no, that's not enough.
Yeah.
Like, what more do you
we're
have
moving
to
along
do?
Right now. Yeah, we're going to find somebody else. So he was the superintending engineer, and that's a really neat story about Kirkfield lift lock and what makes it completely unique that wouldn't be out in the grand world.
Yeah, and it's beautiful too because so the downside from a land-based tourist perspective is it's not quite as accessible. It's sort of out in, you know, beautiful nature.
It's the bird plains. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But in no middle of nowhere, I guess. Yeah. You see, like in terms of like driving somewhere, you're not going to stop for lunch and look at it.
Yeah.
But that, especially as a boater, makes it even more special because you're in just this serene nature. You come up to it either at the top and you're looking down, or you come up and you see this behemoth steel structure, and then it raises you up and you're just out amongst the trees and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what really makes the system very unique. And it's actually a great point that you highlighted where, yeah, it's a different feel. And that's where I think makes the Trent Severn sort of that anomaly, right? Where it's depending on the kind of travel that you want to have. You can cater your trip that way. So if you wanted to be involved in the communities, or you want to go into lunch and you want to have the theater and you want to do all the other stuff and, you know, the grocery stores, you have the ability to do that. We have amazing communities that were truly established on the shoreline, and those communities are still there. So if you're, we want to have that outgoing sort of experience, but then if you also want to have the quieter experience and you want to be a little bit more laid back, you have opportunities like that. And, you know, Kirkfield's a great example of it, where it's wilderness. It's a little bit more natural. You're seeing the stars in the sky. It's a little bit more peace and quiet. You're not going to have the hustle and bustle of the land-based people out around you, especially when you're boating, because you know it from a boater yourself, like myself. Many times, you just want to be quiet at the end of a boating day and enjoy the green grass. And that's where I think what makes the system so special and it, you know, unique being operated by Parks Canada is it really does bring in that parks flair too, where all of our staff that operate the locks, they also tend to the grounds and tend to the lawns and all of the assets themselves. So it really does make it truly unique for any kind of a boater that you might be. Two people might travel out in the system with two different personalities. Not everyone's got the personality like you and me. They might want to be quiet or moving, and you have that opportunity too, and you can do that directly boating beside somebody else, but have two completely unique experiences.
Yeah, and you can make it your own. Whatever you want really is there. You got bigger lakes, you've got the quiet rivers, you've got big cities, you've got secluded anchorages. Speaking of different options, you got the two lift locks, right?
Yeah.
So the first, so he made Peterborough lift lock first, is
first,
that correct?
Yeah. And 1896-1904.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, that takes a little while.
A little bit.
So I can see why he'd say, you know what?
I'm a little tired right now.
Yeah. Let's not do that again. Yeah.
In 1900s, building something that big. It's crazy. And it's still operating today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, I love that you can drive right through it. Like, it's bizarre. How often does everyone that drives through that tunnel honk? Are you supposed to honk? Or do you? Or you're not supposed to?
My staff's going to love this. Yeah. It's just an unwritten code in the law in Peterborough. You're driving through the tunnel, you give a little toot.
Yeah.
You know, I just always assume that we're honking just to say thank you.
Yeah.
Like, thank you, engineering. Thank you, Peterborough, making this really, really cool asset. But I don't know, maybe it's just the for the staff to say hello. But here's a neat fact,
okay.
Really, really neat fact for you. So the tunnel itself, it's high. It has this high arc to it, but very narrow. It's only a one-lane road going right through it. It wasn't really, again, we're talking 1900s. It was actually built that way, and the high arc in it was to accommodate the farmers bringing the hay in and out. So that's why it's got that weird high straight arc, was so when the farmers are stacking their hay bales on top of the trailer, they can get through the tunnel.
That's fantastic.
Really neat little fact.
All right. Well, my brother-in-law is a farmer, so there you go. Still leading the way, farmers then and now.
Still now, yeah.
So let's talk about that gigantic concrete structure around the hay tunnel.
Yeah.
So dry, it's not reinforced, right? There's no rebar in it. Tell me about, like, give me all the bullet point facts, because it is one of my favorite boating things of all time. Not just locks, but I can't get enough of it. I never get tired of it.
Yeah.
Driving by it, I love it. And I am one of those people that honk in the tunnel as well.
Yeah, Steve honks and he always text messages me. So it doesn't matter what time of day it is or whatever it is, I'm always getting a selfie photo of, I bet you'll never guess where I am right now. And I'm like, it's the largest in the world, Steve. I think I can figure it out. I know you're right around the corner. Really, really unique. So the Peterborough lift lock, it's 65 feet tall. The towers, you know, we talk about the dry concrete that's poured 120 feet tall, and the other ones on the either side are 100 feet tall. So those towers, when they poured them, and even all of the concrete in the structure, so because there was no reinforcing steel, they literally did it in layers. So this had the forms, wood forms, 12 to 18 inch sections, and they would pour it, stack it, tamp it, a really dry concrete mix so they could tamp it down, and then they just went all the way up. So all the way to the top and all the way deep back. The breast wall itself is 80 feet thick, so it goes back into the channel 80 feet thick to hold, because what's unique about that lock is it's also a dam, right? So the lock itself is also holding back all of the water to Peterborough. So what made that spot unique and what makes the lift lock unique. Now we're going down into the stories not told before. The original canal was actually slated to go through Peterborough, in downtown Peterborough, so where the power canal is. So what made Peterborough unique, when, and this is why it's called the Electric City, is it was the first community to be powered by the hydro plant. So the hydro plants going down that part of Peterborough predated our canal. So the original intent was to build the waterway through downtown Peterborough and connect up to where Trent University is now. But when they started to do that construction or looking at it, it was shale. It was like rock. Very, very hard digging, very, very challenging. So remember the story back to the high arc tunnel at the lift lock. It was farmer fields over there. So when they looked at it and then to build it, it's very challenging building something that size. Remember, 8 years to construct. You couldn't do it if there was water all the way around it because you'd have dams on either side. So they used the natural dams on the actual power canal. They built the lift lock in the middle of a farmer's field. It was farmer's field. And then they built it all up around so they could construct it. Then they constructed lock 20 directly down below at Little Lake. And then at the very, very end, right at Trent University, and if you're boating through the system and you're coming down, there's the old rail bridge there. That was the very last part. They opened that part up, and then they flooded the entire river all the way down past the golf course to the actual lift lock, and then they put water to it because it was constructed in a farmer's field. So back when there was no water there. Really, really innovative. Like, to think of that kind of innovation in the 1900s, to look and plan something like that today, that would be a risk and a half.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So here's a question that I'm sure you get asked all the time. I mean, it's cool to look at now, but why bother? Why do all of this engineering? Why not just make a regular lock or locks?
It was just too long. So with the construction of the lock then, you know, to travel that 65 feet all the way up, it would have been very similar to the Flight of Eight in Ottawa on the Rideau Canal. To travel that kind of time. So it would be an hour and a half to 2 hours to get through that part. And back then there was that, again, it was the farming, it was the construction, and then it started to really turn into speed, and tourism was really starting to take off and boating was taking off. So RB Rogers, for the cost of it, went over and he built the lift locks, and he built it because he could do it in 90 seconds. So that travel, that 65 feet from start to finish is 90 seconds. There's no power. It's just a big teeter-totter with the upper chamber has an extra foot of water, it adding in another 1,500 metric tons. And it's just connected by a 12-inch pipe. So those big rams that you see at the lift lock, they're floating. They're floating in water, connected by a channel that goes down that we call our press well with the 12-inch pipe that connects the two. So when our lock master's operating that spot, he's using that chamber in the upper part, which is a foot more water in it, heavier. The moment he pulls that little valve up, the weight of that water presses down. It forces the water that it's floating under through that 12-inch pipe to the other side, and that takes the lighter chamber and raises it all the way up to the top. So it doesn't use any power. It's just used on weight.
And that's the same way that it was designed that is being used now, right?
Yeah, same way.
Is the same system at Kirkfield?
Same system at Kirkfield. Yep. The operation is the exact same. He just took the operation and then what he had already done at the lift lock and proved to the world at that point that you could build something that big, that fast, and it would operate. Because all the other canals and the other lift locks in the world that RB Rogers went to study, they weren't as large as Peterborough. Obviously, it's still the largest in the world today. He proved that, so he already had the technology. He knew it would work, so he knew it would work in Kirkfield. So he just took the same thing, and all he did was turn his new, which, again, obviously never meeting the man, but took his fascination for steel, and then he made it cheaper, quicker, and built it in Kirkfield with the steel gantry system.
I love it. And there's every lock has, you know, its own kind of – these ones are in particular unique.
Yeah.
Every lock has a story. We're not going to go through all – is it 42? How many are there? How many are on the entire system?
Oh, my God.
No.
Normally, you would nail this.
44.
There it is.
Oh, use take two. Use take two. We'll clean it up in post. We'll fix it in post. Don't even worry about that. But I want to talk about – there are 44 locks that are built that are being used on the system. My favorite all-time fact you gave me a couple boat shows ago was that there was at least one lock that was made that exists now that was never connected, the Ghost Canal.
Yeah.
So what is it, near Newmarket?
Got it.
There is a concrete, there is like a lock that you would see on the system that, like you're saying, in a farmer's field, that's still there. Because they never, what was it supposed to go?
Yeah, it was supposed to connect down off of Simcoe. It was supposed to come down there. So it's called the Lost Canal, the Ghost Canal. And there was, here it is, Peterborough. Yeah. So Peterborough, that was built in the middle of the field, wanted to connect it to, you know, the water, but using the farmer's field. So very similar. The intentions were to bring it Simcoe all the way straight down through Newmarket. And when they filled it up, there wasn't enough water. So the dams, the locks, and the concrete wall still there. I think this might be fun. We should probably go. Let's shoot a little short.
Yeah.
And let's go together to try to find the Lost Canal.
I love it. We should definitely do that.
No, we've not done it. So we should go do that. Let's see if we can get some time together, and we'll shoot a little short. And we'll go out together and we'll find the Lost Canal.
Fantastic. That's a good way to end. And I know you're busy. I really appreciate your time. Guest number one, Chad Buckner, my friend. Thank you so much.
A real honor. And I look forward to coming back and doing some more. Best of luck, as always. And I can't wait to see you guys this summer. Can't wait to get on the water with you. And let's go find some canals. And let's get some Waterways TV happening. And really looking forward to this summer, Steve.
Absolutely. I'm excited for this Lost Canal hunt.
Oh, this is going to be real fun. Yeah.
Stay tuned.